I'm going to tell you today about some work that I've done with Robin Blumenkloof, who's in the row there with his leg up. That's we've been working on for the last couple of years. It's a kind of one of those situations where a lot of evidence was pointing us in one direction, and then we've tried to complete that chain of logic, and it just doesn't work. So we're calling it the curious non-existent of Gaussian two designs. I'll try quickly. I've only got 20 minutes. I'll try quickly to get across. It's probably two designs. It's the most curious word in there. And so I'll spend some time trying to motivate it and let people know what they are and why we like them, and then show you why they don't work in this infinite dimensional limit. So I'll give you some examples in the finite case, why that makes us think that it should work in the infinite dimensional case, or the continuous variable regime for quantum information. And then we'll show you more evidence of why we think it should work, and then we'll end up disappointing you in the end. Okay, so here we go. Why do we care? So stepping all the way back in quantum mechanics in general, not just quantum information theory, we're interested in quantities like these, expectation values, variances, fidelities, and then I've written a little cart. There's a lot buried in that little arrow there. For tomography, we're going to go from a set of measurements, preferably projective measurements, to some estimate of a state rho. Also, you could estimate a process. Just giving you an idea of the kinds of quantities that we're interested in. You'll notice I've tried to write them as traces of operators and projectors onto pure states, and that's the object. That's what I'm. You see these projectors onto pure states popping up to various powers. So that's what I want you to remember for the definition of a T design in a second. So we want these quantities. Often we want more than that. We want to average them over some ensemble of pure state psi. Okay. Just some real basic stuff here. An ensemble is going to be some set of states and a measure or a distribution over that set. Okay, and I'm using both the words distribution. In the finite case, we usually think of a distribution. In the infinite case, we're going to have to think about a measure, sampling from a measure over this continuous set of states, and that is indeed the case we're going to deal with later on. So when I say we're often interested in the average over the uniform ensemble of pure states in some Hilbert space H, I'm going to be thinking about finite dimensional Hilbert space. What we mean by the uniform ensemble, by our definition, is we mean the unitarily invariant Haar measure on that finite dimensional space. So you've got a finite d-dimensional Hilbert space, you've got a natural action by the unitary, by UD, the group of d by d unitary matrices, and there's some measure, d, over the states. If I pick a pure state and I think about the kind of sphere, the hypersphere generated by the unitary action in Hilbert space, there's a unique measure called Haar, in which that is unitarily invariant. Doesn't matter if I spin it around, I get the same distribution of states, okay? And that's what we're using as our definition of uniform. Okay, so you'll notice the things on the last slide were kind of polynomials in this projector psi. So this another silly kind of cartoon arrow here. I'm saying for any polynomial, t-th order polynomial in, say, x, whatever, something that you look up in any book or find, you can always use that to define a polynomial in the projector psi, and that's what those quantities on the last slide look like, those variances or fidelities or expectation values. They look like some polynomial for some order t, and that's our motivation for the definition of a t design. I said before we're interested in averaging these quantities over the uniform distribution of states. T designs are ensembles of states on the Hilbert space H such that one of these averages for some polynomial of order t is exactly the same as the average you would get over the uniform set. Okay? So again, we're a t design in some sense, we've got the set of kind of all pure states on Hilbert space with this flat distribution, this Haar distribution. And we're calculating some polynomials in those states that have some order t. And instead of using the entire set of states to compute these averages, T designs allow you to take a subset of states with some distribution, some ensemble of states, that give you exactly the same T moments of the totally uniform distribution. Okay, so there's some idea of you're saving something here. You're using a smaller set of states to mimic or simulate at least t-th order moments of the entire set of states. Just a few facts. Any t design is automatically a t minus 1 design by definition, because any t-th order polynomial is a t minus 1th order polynomial. Just kind of a little more technically, any polynomial is equivalent to some symmetric operator on the Hilbert space. That arrow there is completed by finding, you know, every polynomial on the left of that arrow at the top to find some symmetric operator. And that's, in that case, here we go, I've called it F hat. So some symmetric operator that corresponds to that polynomial, and that's the average that you want. That's, you know, this is whatever the polynomial is according to a variance or a fidelity or something. You want to compute this average over the entire hard distribution of states. And what we're saying is that this is the mathematical condition at the bottom. Every t design, the mathematical condition is that I've written it as a discrete sum. So my t design is a set of states phi. This is the uniform ensemble. And the average over the t design gives you the same average over the uniform set. And you can go from here. This implies that from the symmetric operator condition, that every t design, an equivalent condition is that every t design, the projector, I'll call it the projector onto the t design, has to be proportional to the projector onto the symmetric subspace of these t. I should have a t on there, sorry. Oops. Of t copies of that Hilbert space. Okay? Yes? No. We're not going to use that condition. We're just going to say any set with any distribution. Okay? In the finite case, it's uniform, usually. I mean, it usually is a uniform condition, but it doesn't have to be. Examples. So one designs are really simple. Rank one POVMs is enough. And any orthogonal basis, and I've just jotted down there how you would show it, the average over a unitary group, if anybody's tried it, always gives you the trace. The average of some operator A always gives you the trace, which is the same as the average over any basis. So this is satisfies the t-design condition. Any overcomplete set would be a one design as well. And so a famous example in the infinite dimensional case would be a coherent state, which we'll talk about a bit. Two designs are much more interesting. You'll notice those examples at the beginning, variances, fidelities, they're usually second order polynomials in these projectors. This happens to be where most of the action is. And so two famous examples of two designs for finite dimensions are mutually unbiased bases, which I'm sure you've heard about. They're linked to ideas in discrete phase space, which is another analogy that pushed us to think about the infinite dimensional case. And sick POVM, symmetric informationally complete POVMs. Both of these examples make what I would say critical use of what we're calling the Heisenberg-Weil group. So for mutual unbiased bases, for those of you who know, you take some combinations in this operator X, which bumps you up in a computational basis, and this operator Z, which gives you a phase, which is a root of unity. And you diagonalize some combinations of these two things, and you get mutually unbiased bases. And the sick POVM case is conjectured and shown numerically and analytically for small dimensions to be true, that if you take the orbit, so I take the group generated by this X and this Z in some finite dimensional, d-dimensional space, I take that finite group and I pick I pick a certain fiducial state, phi naught, in the space, and I look at the set of states generated by this group acting on that phi naught. The same phi naught, I take every element of the group and I look at this set of states. And that turns out to be a sick POVM is conjectured to be true for all finite dimensions D and shown to be true for small D. So this Heisenberg-Weil group is playing a role in both of these cases, and it leads us to the infinite dimensional case, because there's certainly another analogy in infinite dimensions to phase space, and we can think about orbits. The Heisenberg-Weil group has an infinite dimensional analog that we're going to, you know, these examples are leading us to think should give us what we want in infinite dimensional space. So two designs are great for all sorts of reasons. They're known to be optimal, for example, in tomography. So two designs are what we want. They're useful, they're fun, Let's see if we can find them. And the known cases are in finite dimensions, and our question is quickly converging on whether they exist in finite dimensions in the infinite dimensions in the continuous variable case. T designs for t greater than 2, there's not many new uses known for those, so we're sticking with the two-dimensional case. So as what I'm calling a standard construction for these things would be the following. Kind of motivated by the sick PLVM thing where you take some group and you run it, you look at the orbit of some fiducial state under that group. From the definition before, you can see one way to guarantee yourself a T design would be to find some group G. So this group G has a unitary, assuming it has a unitary representation on your Hilbert space H. And from that symmetric operator definition at the beginning, if the T-fold, the T-copy representation of that group is irreducible, we say irreducible on the symmetric subspace, it means if I pick an element of the symmetric subspace, that T-fold tensor product representation of the group, you know, will not take you out of that subspace, and it will cover the whole subspace. This is what we mean by an irreducible representation. So if you can find a group who has this property, then you're guaranteed that it's going to give you a T design because I'm calling it G instead of phi. So there's some group element, the representation U of G acts on the fiducial state to give you some state that I'll label by the group element G. The T-fold copy of that guy, which is used in the definition of the T design, is going to be, you know, the T-fold copy of the representation acting on the T-fold copy of the fiducial state. Sorry, the PDF printer kind of ruined these lines. That says is an element of the symmetric space. Obviously, any state raised tensor powered T times together is symmetric. So that's an element of the symmetric state. So if this representation, now I've written it often for representations, we think of the reduction of a representation in terms of block diagonalizing a matrix. Assume the top left corner is your symmetric subspace. If this T-fold copy gives you an irreducible representation on the symmetric subspace, and this T copies of the fiducial state starts in the symmetric subspace by construction, then this action is going to give you, when I look at the projector onto this collection of states, it's guaranteed to give you the projector onto the symmetric subspace, and that's what guarantees it is something called Schur's lemma that you learn quickly in any group representation theory course. It does the work for you. This is guaranteed. If I find, by construction, this operator commutes with all of the operators in the representation, all of these UGs. And Schur's lemma says, if you find an operator that commutes with every element of a representation, of an irreducible representation, then that operator has to be either 0 or 1. And we know it's not 0, because we're starting from something that's not 0. So it's going to be guaranteed to be the projector on the symmetric subspace. So this is what we're calling kind of a standard construction. It's somewhat straightforward from the representation theory perspective. And I just want to note that G doesn't need to be finite. As I've written here, it's a sum over a uniform distribution of Gs. It doesn't have to be. The infinite, the continuous group analog of this is the Haar measure. The Haar measure is this uniform idea, and Schur's lemma goes through exactly the same way. If I take the integral over this measure of these projectors onto each of the states defined by an element of the group, then I'm guaranteed to get the projector onto the symmetric subspace. So in infinite dimensions, we're going to be considering a lot of those. The motivation for that standard construction was from finite dimensions. We're trying to think about infinite dimensions here. So we're going to consider just a single mode of a harmonic oscillator is going to be our infinite dimensional Hilbert space, L squared of R, square integral functions on the real line. We get this nice phase space analogy through the Moyal-Wigner-Weil transform, this, you know, going to Wigner functions on a phase space. Any operator in the Hilbert space, you know, there's a one-to-one mapping with distributions on the phase space. So, and again, in infinite dimensions, the Heisenberg-Weil group plays an integral role. Now, before it was those X and Z operators, and now we all learn about the X hat and P hat operators in quantum mechanics in the infinite dimensional case. This is called the infinite dimensional analog of the Heisenberg-Weil group. generated, sorry, the algebra is generated by x hat, p hat, and the identity. And this is probably used the most in quantum optics in the form of the displacement operator, where I'm using x bar and p bar to be the average displacements for a displacement operator. You just exponentiate these elements of the algebra like that. And everybody who's studied quantum optics probably knows that this, if I look at the orbit of this operator, this Heisenberg-Weil guy, on the vacuum state, then I get the coherent states. And we know that the coherent states become, when I sum them up, here's the quantum optics notation, I get the projection on the symmetric subspace. But they aren't two designs, which we'll say in a second. There's more transformations on infinite dimensional Hilbert space that are intimately related to this phase space picture, and they're the symplectic transformations. There's a U.S. solid decomposition, it doesn't matter. You can parameterize them, and in quantum optics, these are squeezings. Or in this parameterization, we've got squeezing, shearing, and rotation, but it turns out you only need, for a completely general Gaussian on infinite dimensional space, you only need the squeezing and the shearing. So some Gaussian wave function on this space looks like a squeezing and a displacement. And this, so this symplectic group with the Heisenberg-Weil group together, their action, it has an invariant measure. So this is why we're led to this question. Do the Gaussian states, which the Heisenberg-Weil, the finite Heisenberg-Weil kind of leads us in the infinite dimensional case, to the infinite Heisenberg-Weil and the what I'm calling HWSP group, does that set of states, the Gaussians, form a two design for infinite dimensions with this measure, or with any measure we're going to ask a question? The finite dimensional case seems to be telling us that. So what's this? Why do we think it should be happen? Why do we think it should happen? Well, the standard construction should work. Remember, I'm looking for a representation of a group whose t-fold representation is irreducible on the symmetric subspace. So what's the symmetric subspace of two copies of the harmonic oscillator? So L squared of x and L squared of y. We split it into x plus y and x minus y. It turns out Gaussians, if you write it down, you'll see Gaussians split up in this. If I take a product of two Gaussians, I get this thing on the plus subspace. It looks like up to a factor of root 2, exactly the same Gaussian. And then this in the minus factor, you get a squeeze state at the origin. We know that the Heisenberg-Weil group is going to act on this plus factor in exactly the same way it acts on one copy, so we don't have to worry about it. It's going to be irreducible from that perspective. And that we know from quantum optics from squeezing in quantum optics that the squeezing operator gives us even and odd multiples of the number state. So the even and odd subspaces are now irreducible under that action. And this state is clearly in the even space, the 0, 0 at the origin. So altogether, we think this thing should work. This group action looks like it's irreducible on the symmetric subspace of two copies. So we should get the two design condition to pop out via Schur's lemma. And sparing you any real serious mathematics, it turns out it doesn't work. So you can calculate and you can do this all on the number basis and calculate it analytically. And you'll find that no matter what measure you take, actually, it doesn't have to be this Heisenberg-Weil symplectic measure, that this operator, the average of this squeezing, this squeezed vacuum thing, always there's a root n in the denominator here. So the projector onto the, remember, we're only looking at the minus factor. The plus factor is taken care of by Heisenberg-Weil. We want the projector onto the even subspace in this example, the 2n from 0 to infinity. But we've got this root n in the bottom, and that's an upper bound on any measure that you take. This thing is going to be upper bounded by this operator. So it's not working. Something's wrong. You can also look at it in terms of Wigner functions if you like. These are terrible cartoons, sorry, but if you're piling up squeezed ellipses on your phase space, you can show that the Weil operator for this projector onto the symmetric subspace is like a spike at the origin and then flat everywhere else, and you just can't get the flatness that you want. These things don't drop off the right way. So what's going on? Is it the non-compact group? Is that the problem? No. Well, the coherent states are non-compact as well. You integrate over those and you get the projector onto one copy of the subspace, no problem. So is Schur's lemma wrong? No. Schur's lemma is pretty standard. What's going on is that the operator that we're trying to construct, our candidate for the projector on the symmetric subspace, it just doesn't exist. This integral just isn't defined, and so we're not allowed to use the standard construction where it's like, oh, average over the group, and that operator will be what you want. That operator doesn't even exist in this example. So, you know, other two designs might be possible, but they can't be Gaussian, is what we've shown. And so what does it mean, kind of practically? Well, I've run out of time. You can read this here. It doesn't matter how much squeezing you use. It doesn't matter if you just focus on a bounded subspace. These things aren't going to have the right distribution to be a T-design. Does that mean they're useless? No, of course not. They're still better than coherent states for picking, you know, for, say, tomography or something where, you know, if you have a Wigner function with some high-frequency components, this, you know, some squeeze states are going to pick that up better than coherent states. But it doesn't satisfy the kind of the abstract standard definition of a two design. So they're suboptimal in some sense. You can think of possible modifications to make it up. But yes, that's our results. And thank you.